Should I go into one of these fields that takes hundreds of thousands of dollars of educational expense? Is that going to pay me back? Is it the right move financially in terms of where I want to take my family to go back and get more education as an adult?
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Stephen, welcome to T-minus 0 days until the end of Low Dough Feb. We are recording this on the final afternoon of Low Dough February, the month in which we seek to spend as little as possible so that we can tally up our savings, get an idea for what it actually at minimum costs to run our households, maybe do some generosity giving with some of the extra we've had from the month. The more we do this, the more I am convinced that it's actually one of the best tools in the tool bag for a family that's trying to be financially informed.
I totally agree. I feel almost embarrassed at how much I believe in this concept because we made it up. And now the amount of people who are doing it as an annual rhythm is growing. And I don't think it, you know, oh, I feel like a bigger Yahoo because people are doing this thing. I actually just go like, this is very, very healthy. And I'm, you know, there are times in the month where your sense of entitlement or your child's sense of entitlement will run aground in Low Dough Feb. And you'll think to yourself, this is why we're doing this. This is totally very good. And I'm just repeatedly struck by how possible it is to have a wonderful, delicious week's worth of meals and you didn't spend bupkis to make it happen.
I felt guilty the entire month about how well we ate. Some of that was like food in the back of the deep freezer that we didn't. Oh my goodness, we have ribeyes. What we're doing tonight, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. It is not only the final day of Low Dough Feb, it's also the Shabbat coming tonight. And we are doing what my wife is calling a stone soup party.
Oh, I like it.
Because it was so encouraging to us. We had a lot of new families that had never tried this before say, hey, we want to do it this time.
Yeah.
I think we've got five other families gathering. And we just said, I don't care if it fits together. You can bring a bag of marshmallows and we'll start a campfire. Whatever you got. Oatmeal? Sure. We'll
six pasta dishes. Whatever.
And we're just going to get together. You know those Staleys that we mentioned often here?
Yes.
They found a whole honey-baked ham in their freezer. So I don't think we're going to starve. But
I love it.
That's what we're going to do to wrap it up. And I was going to ask you, do you have a sense for what kind of savings you found in the manual household today or this month?
I do. My quick brag for you is that here's my smoker app, and you can see that.
Oh,
you can see that the midnight smoker is going. And
you're at 250. You're kind of hovering around 250. That sounds like maybe pork shoulder or brisket temperature. I don't know. What are we making? Ribs?
You're something else. It is a pork butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you get out the big metal claws and you make yourself, we're doing tacos. And the money that I spent to make tonight happen, it's going to be really good. Well, I don't know what sort of tallies you want on Lodo.
Just give me a
percentages.
Give me a whatever you feel like. I have a dollar amount. That's all I have to offer today is... We tried to save in all the categories, and this was our total savings.
Okay.
You don't have to share that if it's too personal.
I have two categories to share. One is food savings, and I'll just say that we saved in eating out and eating at home, we saved $700 versus our regular budget.
Nice.
So that seems awesome. The dollar amount is less impressive than giving the percentage on this other category, which is clothing. So we saved 90% of our clothing budget And the only reason there's anything there is because softball came up and I had to purchase a couple of softball clothes, which killed me on Lodo Feb. And I think my daughter's looking at me at the register at Dick's Sporting Goods going, this is killing you, isn't it? And I go, it is killing me.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's a chunk of change. And as people will know, I have to say this caveat. We talked about this before. There are some things that you'll buy at the end of January, knowing I can't buy them tomorrow. And there are things that we'll definitely be buying on March 1st because we couldn't buy them on February 28th. But that's not the point. The point is saying no for a while. And some of those things will never be replaced because they were an instinct. They were just a impulsive desire and they'll just go away. Some of those things you actually need, but to go without for a while is something that we don't often taste anymore in American culture. So it's a value, period.
You're not going to go back and buy yourself the latte you skipped mid-February.
Fact.
And so, yeah, the categories that I saved on were, let's see, I wrote this down. We saved on groceries, entertainment, which is kind of if we're going to go out and eat,
of course,
Chick-fil-A, it's going in the entertainment budget. We saved on funny money, which is Amelia and I each have our own like chunk of budget. I think it's $100 a month that we say, do whatever the heck you want with it. Nobody will judge you.
Yeah.
And we, let's see, we saved on clothing. That's it. Those 1, 2, 3, 4 categories led up to $2,143 of savings.
Wow.
Awesome. And I this isn't our biggest month ever, but one thing I used to do is I would count like, well, we didn't spend on my car fund. And then the next month you'll have to buy tires and you go, well, I have to spend that. So I didn't count the categories that I have calculated like a year of expenses
yeah.
and they roll over. I've done that in the past just because I wanted a big number and I found it to be unwise. So
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know if we'll ever set another record in the Parrot House, but we're gonna use that money to help out a family who had a total disaster occur this month, I think. We haven't totally decided that yet, but that's another just icing on the cake of Lodo Feb is sometimes the Lord brings you stuff that needs taken care of and you go, I can take care of it. I agree with you though that the number one benefit, even as I work with families on financial planning, the number one benefit is nobody knows how much could I actually suck in the belt if push came to shove. And families that have really tried this over a few years, they start to get a pretty good idea. Okay, well, Lodo Feb, I spent $500 on groceries for the whole month. And I ate through a whole lot of stuff that was in the freezer. So on a sustainable basis, eating cheap food, maybe I could survive on $700 a month, something like that. That is just such valuable data to have as planning for your money.
It is. It gives you such confidence. And I'll also say that we did the same thing. This is what we typically do is pray for Lord, show us needs and opportunities for our extra money. And lo and behold, a family that's just at arm's reach, you know, just came out in conversation, their needs. And we sort of cut our eyes to each other and winked and like, this is the one. So yeah, it's great.
Speaking of saving money, we're going to talk about why education is useless and a waste of money. And you can save a lot of money by just staying dumb.
Somehow, coming from the Parrot household, which is just, you guys, degrees fall out of your pockets and onto the ground. You guys are degreed up. I don't think that's what you're going to say.
It's not. That was just a joke.
That's hilarious. A hilarious little bit of comedy.
Speaker coach Jeff Davenport has told me an opening joke is kind of an old school played out technique, but I decided to roll it out anyways.
Okay.
What we're going to talk about today is education. We've done episodes in the past about how to fund college. That's one of the number one things people come looking for a financial planner to help them think about is how am I going to save for college for my kids? But a lot of people, especially I'm guessing the 20 somethings who we love having 20 somethings listening to our podcast. Cause man, they could do a whole lot of different things. The path is, there are many options ahead of them. And a lot of them are thinking, is it the right move financially, in terms of where I want to take my family? Is it the right move to go back and get more education as an adult? Maybe they've been to college and they have a bachelor's degree and they're thinking, should I have an MBA? Maybe you're one of those studs that listens to us at age 17 or 18 and you're thinking, I'm about to be a freshman in college, and doctors, they look like they make a lot of money. Should I go into one of these fields that takes hundreds of thousands of dollars of educational expense? And is that going to pay me back? Is that going to lead to the life I want? So I just wanted to take a minute and give people some food for thought when they're asking the question, should I go get more education?
My expectation would be that, thinking of the kind of Abrahamic thoughts that we tend to think, is that you would more or less poo-poo the idea, but maybe there are exceptions. So I'll be eager to hear your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are less important than God's. And so let's start with what he has said.
Powerful. What a powerful confession, Mark. Let's hear God's words.
We talk about five capitals a lot here. The value of wisdom and intellectual capital is a real thing. Proverbs 4:7 says, the beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom, and whatever you get insight. Okay? We're supposed to be pursuing both wisdom and insight. Proverbs 19:2 says, desire without knowledge is not good, and whoever makes haste with his feet misses his way. I see this a lot of times. You and I like to stick our toe into the pool of Elon Musk's X social media platform, formerly Twitter. There's a lot of desire without knowledge. There's a lot of quick experts in our orbit these days. You can become excited about something, and 6 weeks later, you have an online course teaching others how to do it, even though you really don't know what you're doing. So there's something to knowledge. And I would just say education can be a way to steward the mind God gave you, growing in wisdom to serve him better in work and in life. And I do think, as much as your expectation is for me to poo-poo spending a bunch of money on education, what I also want to poo-poo is, oh man, formal education is for suckers. We can learn everything we need to know on YouTube. That's something I hear more and more lately. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's actually spurning the hard work and time it takes to build actual knowledge. So I think the Bible has something to say about that.
Mark, I want to pause and say that that alone is worth noting, because we are unusual in the space of encouraging large families. We love homeschooling. We love family on mission. We love multi-generational vision. And yet, there's something in the backwaters of American religion that makes people think that somehow keeping people dumb and low to the ground and having a very small worldview is somehow desirable. And the Bible doesn't know anything about that. There are things that we're supposed to be ignorant of, but that would be limited to evil and sin and the treachery of manipulative thinking, not being uneducated. So I like us saying that, because there's an assumption a lot of times in the space that we move in that there's something noble about keeping the kids on the farm and they don't need no book learning. Yeah. They don't need to be reading Virgil.
Man, I see it even in the church. I've been a part of a church where the guy who got up and preached every week, I don't think you have to go to seminary. I really don't. And I've been a part of a church where somebody's like so anti-theological education that once a week they said something that made no sense, and 10 minutes of research could show, dude, if you just knew how to study, you wouldn't say this kind of junk. And so not everybody has to go to seminary. I definitely don't think that. And that experience made me go, sometimes it's a good thing to have somebody who's devoted a few years of their life just to studying the scriptures, and even to knowing maybe they don't have the same opinions as others, but they know what those opinions are.
Yes.
And kind of enunciate them. So anyways, wisdom and knowledge are good. The Bible extols them. But what else is good? Stewardship of financial resources. Luke 14:28. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? We're supposed to know how to manage the resources at our disposal. Matthew 25, the parable of the talents. The two faithful servants not only were able to, they had a clear accounting of what they had been left in charge of. They also had a very constant, like the master could show up after years of being gone and go, what'd you do? And they had it right ready to go. Here's exactly where my estate sits. I know how much returns I've gotten on this massive amount of wealth you left me. What do you want to know? I've got my hands around all of it. So there's an expectation that we would produce returns in all of our capitals. That includes intellectual. Education might be a way to do that. It also includes financial, which means we are expected not to go flush all our money down the toilet for some useless degree because it's culturally acceptable and kind of the natural stream for us to go down. So those are both important.
Yeah, the situation that's going to be posed to you by the listener is, well, of course, we're supposed to steward our finances, but you guys have told me in the past that intellectual capital is more important than finances. But what we're trying, what we have to solve for is that we have to furnish all of our family's capitals, and the money that we're given in this lifetime isn't just for our lifetime, it's for the generations. So you've got to think, you've got to do this like constant calibration of what's the return on how much I'm going to learn. Okay, we say that intellectual capital is more valuable than financial. Does that mean that you should bankrupt yourself by going to every kind of graduate program that you can think of so you could get endless amounts of information in your brain? Of course not. So I'm again looking forward to you helping us through how do you think through how do we trade off money for intellectual capital.
Yeah. I'm going to give us one last biblical fence post to keep us inside of God's plan here. And that's that we're going to kind of throw out certain professions, for example, in this podcast that cost so much money and maybe don't, spoiler, maybe they don't all produce great financial returns on that investment. But I do believe that the Lord calls people to all sorts of different work. Sometimes the Lord doesn't call us to work at all. And you can spend, if you're listening to this as a 19-year-old, you can spend a lot of time wringing your hands and going, what is my call, my true calling? When the answer is actually, you just need to go out and work. But sometimes
what could we do a whole episode on that sentence right there? I totally agree. And I totally believe that we have overpromised people that if you gaze long enough into the crystal ball, however you want to describe that, go to a conference, get in a quote Holy Spirit trance, whatever, take this quiz, take this course, go to the seminar, you'll eventually figure out what your true calling is, and then you can go pursue that. What a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah, my sister's father-in-law is one of my favorite examples because he went to a job for 40 years on an assembly line in Detroit, and that's what he did. And you talk to him about finding your true calling at work, and he kind of snorts in your face and asks for another Miller Lite and then says, yeah, you just go to work because that's what you got to do to feed your family.
Yeah, so, the calling is to feed your family.
My Michigan accent's not great. It kind of became a Bronx thing there, but
it's a difficult accent.
Yeah. Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. If additional education is required to fulfill a clear calling from the Lord, it might be worth pursuing. But if it's, again, I'm just going back to, if it's just a societal expectation, Stephen, you and I definitely both came from an era where if you said at high school graduation, I'm not going to college, people were like, oh, he's failed. He has failed. He is on the path to hourly kind of minimum wage employment for the long haul.
Yes.
And financially, I think people are less and less convinced by that argument now. I hear more and more people saying, oh, well, I hope my son's in the trades or doing something that doesn't require college at all. But there is still a societal expectation, again, that I think for most people who are successful in their high school years are going to, if they just go with the flow, be carried down a path. And I think if you, I'm not even convinced that's a bad thing. We can talk about that some other time, but if that can happen to you as an adult too. Oh, I'm a mid-level professional. And I look at spreadsheets all day. So I guess I should go get an MBA now. Well, that's what we want to give you the equipment to assess here. Anything to add before we move on from these biblical touchstones into specific examples of what this means?
Let's go. The people are jonesing at this point. Let's give them some deets.
Okay. I'm going to use my story first, but I think that we'll go through a few. So I graduated from college. We used to have that pretty cringy intro to the podcast where I said, I'm an Ivy League educated certified financial planner with an MBA. And I don't know what else we said, but I kind of touted my education. And while I found it a little bit, I didn't love that intro because I felt a little like I was trying to prove something. It is true. I graduated from one of the most prestigious universities in the world and kind of had the option to work where I wanted. So I went and worked at high finance and kind of international organizations, the IMF, went to Freddie Mac during the financial crisis. And I worked really hard during those years. So I worked for people who had been in the game for a very long time. And basically their take was, I'm going to teach you a ton and I'm going to put you through the meat grinder in the 2 or 3 years that you're with me. And so I did that. And then I was kind of in that position that we just talked about, which is, well, I guess you get an MBA at this point in your career so you can keep moving up the corporate ladder. And I kind of personally thought at the time I was working for an employer who would pay for a lot of that degree. I thought, well, if something really bad happened, this would be nice insurance so that if I needed to just go get a job, I'd have something else on my resume that maybe other people wouldn't have. So that's why I decided to do it. And then I got to my MBA program and it was a fine MBA. It was a middle of the road MBA program. It was not Harvard. And I started looking around at the students around me and going, I learned so much more about everything we learned in MBA school, accounting, strategy, marketing. I learned so much more about all those things by working for people who were going to just work me like a dog and expect me to be smart enough to go figure out things I didn't know. I mean, I had maybe a unique situation because I was working in finance and there was times I didn't understand what we were trying to do. And my boss threw 2 textbooks from his MBA days on my desk and said, learn everything in here or don't come back to work next week. And so I'm sure some of that was just bluster, but the point was, I was drinking from a fire hose at work. And then I got to my MBA program and they were kind of like, oh, our goal here. It became very clear. Our goal here is to make money. We are trying to make money by making sure you sort of learn some things and that our program isn't so shamefully, embarrassingly bad that we get a bad reputation. But we don't really care if you're good because we're not employing you afterwards. We're just hoping you'll go out and be smart enough to kind of not embarrass us. And so it was hugely disenchanting for me to show up in those classes. And I I still to this day, I'm like, I don't know that I learned much at all in that program. I had the best class I took in my MBA program was a human resources class, which is crazy. If you think about human resources, is probably at the center of so much of the nonsense that we've experienced in the past few years. I come away from that experience with kind of the assumption that for most people who are just doing it to get a leg up, finding a really challenging job where you're constantly growing, probably a better path to getting intellectual capital than going and shelling out for a program whose primary goal is not to make you wise, it's to make money.
You probably had a fairly common MBA experience, which is people feel like they're pushing papers around and wasting time and learning a few nuggets, but you know, what are we doing here? And then, okay, I got the degree. That's why I gave three evenings a week for 2 years, even with a couple of babies at home, because I wanted to do this MBA. So my question to you is, even after the rigmarole of getting it, did it benefit your career? Did you make more money because of it?
No.
Oh.
The funny thing is, and I don't know if I've ever even told the whole career story on the podcast. I won't do it now, but I quit my high-paying finance job when I moved to Utah and took a job that paid $8 an hour answering the phones at a online ski retailer.
Because you love phones?
No, because I wanted to ski every day, and I didn't have to be at work until 3 p.m. at this job. and I think that even in that job, like it was almost impossible to get that job with an MBA because they're like, you don't want to work here. And I said, well, that's true in the long term, but I can do a really good job for one winter while I ski a bunch. But the thing that led to opportunities and advancement in that job even was I started going, my job is to sell skis. Well, I worked as a finance consultant for the Army for a year, and I'm just going to call up all the guys that I knew there and put together multi-million dollar sales deals and get a commission on those when I was selling. You know, everybody else is making literally $8 an hour, and I'm getting commissioned on $15 million sales deals because of networks and friendships and all that. None of it had anything to do with education. So
right.
I just think, again, we'll talk about this as we move up past kind of the example, but sometimes the benefits of an MBA, if you have one, I hear this all the time. The benefit is mostly the network that you come out of that with.
I see.
But that doesn't have to be true of just an MBA. That can be true of any job you worked at. Wow, I met these five people that were all headed to do cool things. Or
yeah.
I, you know, fill in the blank with any way you might spend your time, you could be establishing a network of people who could have huge impacts in your career in ways you never guessed.
Yeah, that's true.
I certainly wouldn't have taken a job consulting for the Army thinking someday I'm going to sell these guys skis.
Skis, yeah.
But anyways, there's a couple other examples I have, but as I think about it, there's the tradesman versus the college debt example. If you want the detailed version of this, all you have to do is know that most people who pay their own way through college are coming out with over $100,000 in debt. And then go listen to the episode with Steven's brother-in-law on how his story of starting and growing a plumbing company. And you can see, okay, $100,000 in debt leads to average salary of probably $150,000 someday working at a mid-level corporate job, or no debt, just hard work, but lots of crawling in literal poo. Leads to multi-million dollar plumbing company in El Paso, Texas. So if you want that full example, go listen to that episode.
It's a really good episode because my brother-in-law is fascinating. I just throw it out that was February 2nd, 2022, if you want to look for that episode.
It's worth your time.
It's called Small Beginnings.
Even if you don't have interest in this topic, you should still listen to that episode. I talked about pastors. I think this is one where we hear, should I go to seminary? Should I get more theological education? And I don't think there's a clear yes or no answer to that. I think that just as much as you can fall off one side of the road of, I'm just going to go get so much education and I don't actually know God or how to care for a flock of people. That's a real ditch on one side of the road. There's a ditch on the other that I kind of mentioned, which is,
yes,
I don't even know what I don't know.
Ignorance.
And the last thing I just want to say is that the clients of ours, I'd say if you took our top 25% of earners, very few of them, not zero, but very few of them are working in a field that has anything to do with their educational background. Some of them have no educational background beyond high school, but very few of them are making their money because they, you know, went and got this degree followed by this degree, and now they're in the natural progression field from the educational background they have. So
totally true.
The idea that education directly leads to income in the field where you're getting that education, I am less and less convinced by.
I believe that. I've seen that.
So the types of education, I actually went through and pulled average costs. I don't know that we need to really pull this. The average Harvard Business School MBA costs $161,000. For a master's of education, on average, you'll spend about 50 grand. So if you're a teacher, you'll spend about 50 grand on that degree. A Texas A&M Master's of Science degree averages $54,000.
All right.
But there's all sorts of other degrees out there. There's online master's programs, which are about a third of the cost on average of in-person master's programs. And often they also don't require you to step away from work or relocate. You can actually do them while you're doing a job. But you get kind of elitist jerks like me who see that you got an online degree and kind of go, I'm not sure this is even as good as no degree. There's executive programs that are designed for high earning professionals who want to have an MBA. And those cost roughly double what normal MBAs cost. And my proposition is probably just because they can. Like, these people have the money to pay it, so why not charge more? Obviously, these are just averages. There's financial aid. There's all sorts of ways to do it. But in terms of what these different degrees get you, I think there's a few fields where you must have higher education. You can't be a doctor if you didn't go to college, unless you consider yourself like a natural healer or something like
sure.
that. I know you guys have some friends that are in that world. They stay away from us. Basically everything in healthcare, is going to require some education. Even if you want to do nursing, you've got to have higher education.
Hospital administrator.
Yeah. Financial planner. Did you know you can't get a CFP if you don't have a degree?
I did not know that.
I don't know what I think about that. Lawyers have to go to school, and you can't be a judge unless you're a lawyer. So anyways, judge, lawyer, a lot of the legal professions require education. Most education professions require education. Shocker. They're kind of perpetuating their system there. But obviously engineers, we don't really want people building our skyscrapers that haven't spent some time really studying how skyscrapers can be built in a way that they don't blow over. And then there's a lot of jobs that I would say seem like they need a higher level degree, but actually don't. And this is the one where I think people run into a lot of questions. Should I? Business analysts or consultants, software engineers, marketing fields, finance fields, human resources. These are all fields where people go, well, it seems like if I had a degree, maybe I'd be more competitive. And so I just want to talk a little bit about the return on investment for education, because again, the default position is, if I get more education, that's a good thing. It'll be good for me financially, right? So what I did is I took three professions that are all in the general space of medical, okay? These are all medical fields. Medical professionals make a killing, right? That's what we all are taught.
Yeah, you're always taught, grow up to be a doctor.
Right. Now, the three professions I chose are a surgeon, a physical therapist, a doctor of physical therapy, which I talk to people all the time who are in DPT school, and a veterinarian. These are all fields that require roughly equivalent preliminary and secondary training. Now, the surgeon also has to go get a residency, but there's the cost of the education, the average annual loan payment, and the average salary coming out of training. And so all that shakes out to how many years does it take just to break even?
Okay.
As these professions. What's your guess for a veterinarian? How many years does it take where you would be just as good not having done any of the education before you break even with the earnings you're going to earn as a veterinarian, considering the debt and the cost of education?
5.
The answer is 17.1 years.
Oh, my stars. 17 years before you have paid off all of your debts as a veterinary doctor?
So if you want the details,
I do.
Roughly $300,000 total cost of education. Annual loan payments for on average $25,791.
Oh, mama.
Here's the kicker: is your first year after tax disposable income. So your salary less taxes on average $67,500.
Wow.
Which leads to a actual first year disposable income of when you factor in cost of living, et cetera, -$8,291. So you're actually accumulating more debt after you finish for a few years until your salary grows.
Just to pay off your debt. It sounds like the US government.
Yes. How about surgeon? Years to recoup or to break even on the investment you made.
Well, you frightened me because here's what I know about the surgeons. They're going to borrow more, much more, and they're going to be grinding for a couple of years. And if I had to paint with a broad brush, which I must do right now, the surgeon is going to demand a higher standard of living even in his first year of professional life.
So you might be shocked.
Okay.
But
are you going to let me make a guess?
Yeah, yeah. Years to repay. Break even. To the first decimal, please.
I think it's going to be 23 years.
Now, this is factoring in residency and saying post-residency years, which you could say there's 5 years there where they've actually finished medical school, but they're not earning their real potential. So post-residency, 1.9 years to break even.
What?
Because they are borrowing only $40,000 more than the veterinarian on average, but they are getting paid 5 times as much.
Holy cow.
So huge difference, right?
This is a revelation.
Similar debt, but one has a huge ROI and the other one not so great. Now, wow. I don't want to make you struggle through this one, but physical therapist, I'm sad to say it, that, and all of these are averages. So you might listen to this and go, I'm a veterinarian and I make $1 million a year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Totally possible. You might be a great businessman. I know physical therapists who make a ton of money because they're great at running businesses and they have a gym attached, all sorts of options. So please don't write us angry emails. But yeah. Physical therapist, the years to break even for that one, and this did not shock me because I talk to people a lot who say, I need your help because I've gone down this path and it looks hopeless to me. But that break even is 33.6 years.
Got to be kidding me.
Because you are, again, you're taking on 2/3 of the debt of the surgeon, but you're getting paid substantially less on average the veterinarian. So these are just things to consider if you're going down one of those paths that have a defined kind of, this is the cost of education, and it's pretty easy to know within a band what your average salary is going to be in some of these professions.
Yeah.
Not like an MBA where you could make 60 grand a year with an MBA, or you could make a million a year. So I just think if you're considering more education, this kind of break-even calculation should be in your mind, is what is the return on my investment going to be? And let's say that you get to a bad number and you're not happy with it. Because if you're thinking, hey, I'm the first generation wealth builder in my family, and I'm got the opportunity, I've gotten into med school, they've offered me admission, and I'm going to be top of my class, I'm a sharp guy, maybe you do decide to be a surgeon. Nothing wrong with that. But if you've done this math and you say, okay, whatever educational path I pursue, I was thinking about getting a master's in education. It was going to cost me $70,000, and it's going to lead to $5,000 a year more in pay. That might not be a great deal for me. So what are the alternatives? And again, I'm kind of thinking of that professional that's a little bit less defined in exactly what it is they do versus the engineer who's like, I need to go learn how to do, you know, this very narrow band of mechanical engineering. Maybe you just have to go get the education for that. So Stephen, you've got experience with this. We've both done non-traditional learning things in our lives, so feel free to chime in. But the first one is kind of what I described as my first few years of my career. And this was what I'll call apprenticeship and on-the-job learning. And a lot of times when people look at, okay, I've got a mid-level job and it pays this much, and I'm thinking about going and spending $150,000 on an MBA, they don't really think about the opportunity costs there, which is, what would it look like if instead of spending more money to go get education, I just made less but put myself in a position where I was going to be learning incredible amounts? And so what if I found a place where I could do that type of learning and offered to work for less than they typically hire people for and said, I'm here to learn? What kind of opportunities could I open with that type of mentality that said, working for 75 grand less than my market value for 2 years is kind of the same as spending 150 grand for 2 years on an MBA.
That's interesting. So kind of like presenting yourself to one of the masters in your industry and saying, I'll come work for peanuts and learn the tricks from you.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, hey, call up Goldman Sachs and say, I'm willing to work for 20 grand a year, because they're going to tell you it's a pound sand. You know, it's more like, I think there's a lot of people out there who think they cannot find a good person that would be willing to work for them, but they have a really interesting business. I work with lots of entrepreneurs who are like, I would love to have a right-hand person here, and I know a lot about how to run my business, and my eventual goal is to grow it. But today, I couldn't pay them what they're worth. I can't go pay somebody 150 grand. Well, somebody who wants to start a business, it might be worth a whole lot more than an MBA to that person to say, I'm going to go find one of these people, and I'm going to work for 70 grand a year, and I'm going to grow their business so that by the time I'm done with 2 or 3 years of employment for them, they're going to easily be able to pay me what I'm worth. But I've also learned how to start and run a business. So I'm going to hand off to them a much healthier business. I'm going to have learned how to run a business, and then I'm going to go start my own or partner with this person, or who knows. I just don't think people consider that as an option when they're weighing more education.
Yep.
Self-education and certification. So I just believe that most home repairs these days, Stephen, I can figure out with enough time on the YouTubes.
Yeah.
And that wasn't true 20 years ago. There wasn't really a place to go to have a step-by-step walk me through how to change a circuit breaker on my electrical board or whatever.
Yeah.
And for somebody who is motivated, you can learn a whole lot just by kind of being shrewd about where you go for self-education. And I would say a lot of it is free. I talked about networking a little bit. I just want people's minds to expand when you think about, what if instead of spending $100,000 on a degree in business, I thought about what would it look like if I was super creative in spending $1,000 a month just networking with really interesting humans? Because we hear it all the time that people go, I just want mentorship. And they might even be motivated Abraham's Wallet listeners who say, I am willing to go take old graybeards out to coffee. Like, what if I flew across the country and found a family that was doing something totally like what I want to do, and I spent real money? It might cost me a few thousand bucks. Well, I had never thought about that type of networking. And what I'm saying is, this could be money better spent than sitting in a classroom with a bunch of other 23-year-olds.
I have to give as an example, I hope it's kind of inspiring to people. There is a young couple that is in Cincinnati right now. They are in town right now. I saw them last night. I'm going to see them again tomorrow morning. And they came to town. They live in Florida. They came to town specifically because they're Abe's Wallet listeners. They're aware of Jeremy Pryor. They're like, I just want to kind of see what you people do. I want to spend time around people who are celebrating the Shabbat. I don't know how to really do that as a family. I hear you guys talking about your little Midrash Bible studies. I want to see that. I want to experience it. It's so smart that they have just come to meet people, to ask specific questions, to get inspired, to get a vision for what things could be like for them. I was so struck by these people on this journey, which they, of course, reminded me of Abe's Wallet people. So many of our people are what I call new patriarchs. That is, you're in your 20s. You're trying to do something that you've never seen before. You're catching a vision for what a biblical family would look like, and you feel alone in that. That's these kids that came. Now, that is an uphill climb. And do you think that it would be worth some of your vacation money or some of your spiritual growth money or what Mark is talking about here, intellectual capital money? And say, as Mark's suggesting, what if it was a $1,000 trip for us, but what we got out of it was a new frame of reference, or we found some new friends we could refer to, or got into this network of family growing. That seems super inspiring to me, and it seems like a layup. Like, of course, why wouldn't you do that if you had access to that sort of thing? So forgive me, but I totally agree with what you're suggesting.
No, that's a great example. I think you have created an invitation to families to kind of come experience.
Yes, come.
And I don't know if you would be okay with it. I haven't previewed this request with you, but what if we put a little link in the show notes to this episode to our strategic travel guide that walks families considering a vacation through how to align that with an objective such as you are discussing? Would we be willing to give that away for this episode?
I love it. Let's give the people the strategic vacation guide, which might, if you walk through the strategic vacation guide, you might end up in Cincinnati, Ohio, just based on answering those questions.
So you can just click the link in the show notes, get that guide. All we ask in return is that you share the episode with 25 people and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
There you go.
Okay. Just a couple more things before I wrap up. One idea, you know, I was working at a job where I was like I reported to a guy and I thought, I feel ready to be that guy that I report to in this job. But I even applied to a couple jobs at other companies, and they said, well, I'm not sure we see you as that guy because you've been in this role for just a year or two, a couple years, I think. Why do you think you're ready to come be the leader of our team? And so that was the pushback I got. And so what I did is this was in the tech space. I was at a bigger company, and I could find small companies that didn't have the budget necessarily for even hiring a leader in this space. And they honestly didn't know how to do the things that we were doing from a tech standpoint. And I said, could I come in and just give a couple hour talk to your team that does the thing I was doing on how to do it better using some tools that they probably haven't seen? And I did this at four or five companies around Salt Lake City. And I would give like half day little seminars on how to use these types of management strategies when you're developing software. And here, let's talk about the tools and I'm going to have you practice it. And I did that. And the result was I actually charged them for it. Not much. I charged them enough that it would seem to them like I was a legitimate leader in the space. It wasn't about making side hustle money. But then when it came time to actually go and apply for jobs, those companies, when they had openings, were like, oh, you would be willing to come and lead our team? We saw you doing leadership things and teaching, and that would be a total get for us to have you come lead our team. And smart. I had multiple offers in that next roll up just because I spent time going out and kind of freelancing, consulting as somebody that I wasn't yet in my day job. And so it's kind of, this might feel sneaky. It's kind of like a fake it till you make it thing. But you can't always do that in the job you're in. You can't just show up at your work and go, guys, I'm going to lead the team today because your boss will say you're fired. You can also just do volunteering strategically. Nonprofits love volunteers. In my town, I've talked to some guys who've just said, I wanted to start developing kind of oversight abilities, but I wasn't in a position at my day job to have those. So I found small nonprofits that were looking for board members and just started sitting on board meetings and overseeing a budget. And now I'm in charge of a profit and loss statement for a tiny little nonprofit. And I don't make any money, but they're delighted to have it. And I am developing more of a perception that I am the type of guy or woman who looks over this type of entity. And so I've also done this. There was times when I kind of was a strategic advisor to smaller companies. And again, I just think it's a place where you can go find, I want to learn that. Google's not going to invite me to be a strategic advisor, but the small little organization in my town, they would love to have skills. And maybe all I can offer them on day one is the narrow band of things I work on, but I kind of can work a deal with them. Hey, I will give you all you need on this. You let me also be at the table when we're talking about budgeting, because I'd like to grow in my ability there.
Yeah, what I keep hearing you say, Mark, is that experience trumps pedigree.
I think we could almost title the episode that. Experience trumps pedigree. And really, experience includes not just the tasks you've done at a job. It includes the people that you run with, the Rolodex that you have, so that when it comes time, again, I don't know a whole lot about equipping the 10th Mountain Division, but I do know the guy who is in charge of that purchase order. And so sometimes it's just a connection. Sometimes it's actual skills that you develop. Sometimes it's the guy you kind of hate but also love who throws the textbooks on your desk at midnight and says, study for 2 hours before you go home because I want you to know how to do mortgage amortization calculus in your head. So whatever it is, I just want you to have all the tools at your disposal so that when this question comes up, should I go get more education? You can answer it without just saying, well, it seems like the thing people do. Please don't ever answer just about any question that way if you're trying to lead your home and your dough like a biblical boss. I want you to say, I've considered the costs, I've considered the benefits, and I've considered all the alternatives. And in light of those factors, I feel comfortable moving forward. And sometimes that's going to be, yes, go get more education. Other times, there's an alternative that's free or cheaper that leads to better results for you and your family.
Excellent. Well, Mark, our desire, of course, is always that our Abrahamic family leaders would make the most of their time that they're trading for money. We want them to have as high an income as possible that serves their family. And of course, we want people to get as high of an education as is needed to do the thing that serves your family the best. And as you told us, ignorance is never lauded in the scripture. Ignorance is always connected to evil in the scripture. You look that up, that's true. And the Lord wants us to have high capitals, spiritually, relationally, and yes, intellectually as well. So as you guys are pursuing education for yourselves and for your family, we bless you with creativity to do that in a way that brings massive returns to you and to your generations. We'll see you next time.